Excited about today's guest, Joe Kinn. Joe is the strength coach for the Carolina Panthers. He's been almost at every level. That's one of the great things about Joe, is I think that he's able to come with a different perspective than a lot of coaches because he's been at the high school level as a position coach and a strength coach. He's been small college, big college, NFL. He's owned his own facility, and he's always... He doesn't shy away from giving you his opinion, but at his core, he's a great teacher. And if you ever heard him speak, you know that you're going to walk away with some great information, and you're going to get a ton of great information in this episode today. In typical Joe fashion, it went quite some time. I had to try to rush him off because my wife's sitting there pounding at the door, because I had to get to her to the airport. So I apologize to Joe for that. But we're going to go ahead and we're going to make this two episodes. We're going to split this in half. And that way you can watch it in a little bit shorter segments. But like I said, you know, Joe is very gracious with his time and did a phenomenal job in this. Before we get started, you know, as usual, I want to give a little love to our sponsor of the show, Play Sports Performance Flooring. Play does a great job. This is one of their latest installs. I wanted to show you a little bit. You know, it doesn't have to be the whole room, you know, with flooring. You know, looks like Floor Hayes State here did a install with some wood inserts, which I think, you know, when we did the facility at Tennessee, you know, I'm a purist at heart. You know, I like doing the Olympic lifts on wood. And so we wanted to make sure that we had wood and kept going back and forth whether or not to do inlaid or not. And eventually was able to do that. And I got the wood inserts from Play. And they did that here, obviously, with some drop zones with their flooring and then obviously a frame around it. So if you're looking to just make an update to your room, this would be a great update as it looks fantastic. So make sure you get with Angelo and Brett and the gang and talk through some ideas with them. They're very gracious with their time as well. And be happy to talk to you. Very excited about Strength On Demand. If you haven't checked that out yet, strength-ondemand.com. Make sure you go check that out. This is basically an online archive of clinic presentations, some top clinic speakers from around the country, and new presentations added each week. So it's basically just an online clinic that you can access from your phone, your tablet, your computer, at any time, you know, and it's great for listening in the car. It's great for watching on a plane to a trip, whatever it may be. It's a good product. It's one that I designed along with Rob Taylor to basically for me. I wanted something that I could access and be able to do on my time. So there's 52 clinic presentations in there, and then 2014 we'll add another 52. And keep building this online library. So check that out, and sit back and enjoy this episode with Joe. All right, hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I got Joe Kinn with me. Joe, I've known for a long time, a good friend of mine, and a great mentor. He's a guy that I can honestly say that every time I've sat down with him, I've learned not just X's and O's of strength and conditioning, but leadership and the gamut of what we do, and he's always got tons of great information. So, buddy, I appreciate you taking some time out of your vacation to talk to everybody.
I appreciate you having me, Ron. It kind of works out good. I got a bunch of stuff done this morning, and now I got to pack and head to Vegas. So I'm kind of in my strength coach. I'm getting my game face on. So,
see how it goes. Hey, man, you know. Most people know you now as the author, you know, Arizona State and Carolina Panthers and the whole deal. But, you know, one of the things we'll get into a little bit later in this is some advice for young coaches. But a lot of these coaches think that, you know, you just roll out and all of a sudden you're the head strength coach at the Carolina Panthers. And that's not the case. I mean, you know, talk a little bit about how you got into the business and then, you know, what was those steps that led to all the success that you've had?
Well, I think my passion for working out or strength training or what back then I was working out. I had no clue what I was doing. Was mainly because at my high school, It was very diligent strength program, one of the better organized strength programs in the late 70s, before when I was even in grade school, through the time till now. I mean, my high school coach played for Jerry Claiborne at Virginia Tech. He played at my high school. My dad and him were teammates at my high school. So there's a lot of tradition. And when he came back to be the coach, one of the things that he did was begin right away and implement a strength program. And most of it was based off of a lot. We did a lot of the Penn State stuff, one set to, you know, failure for the most part. And we did some things that they were doing at Maryland at the time when Frank Costello was the strength coach there. And Jerry Claiborne had moved to Maryland, I believe, when that was happening. So, you know, at my high school, ninth grade was junior high. And going into 10th grade, if you didn't lift weights, you didn't have a shot to make varsity. And back then at my high school, you made varsity as a 10th grader, whether you played or not, you were. That was a big, big, big deal coming right from junior high and playing varsity football. So that was a goal of mine, and obviously if that's your goal, you got to get to the weight room. Well, one of the good things was when I was growing up, my dad drove the bus for the junior high and high school for the afternoon shift, so he would pick us up at the junior high. I'd take his bus route, and when after he was over, he'd drop us off, me and a few guys at the high school, to train. So that's how it kind of went down, and fortunately for me, not only did I make the varsity, I started for 3 years, and I would say that I'm a big believer in, more so now than ever. And now looking back, I can say this. I was a good football player, and strength training made me a bigger, faster, stronger, good football player in high school. Sure. And by doing that, because back then a lot of guys didn't train year-round like we did, I think that gave me an advantage. And fortunately for me, I got a scholarship. Yeah. So when I went to college, you know, I was a classic hard work beats talent. When talent doesn't work hard, I don't have any, you know, God-given abilities, except that I'm kind of averaging a bunch of good stuff. So what happens again? You commit yourself to the weight room, and you're a solid college football player that over 5 years became a bigger, faster, stronger, solid college football player.
Right.
You know, the real attraction, though, came when I was hurt. I got redshirted my first year, so you know how that goes. You spend your whole life in the weight room. The next spring, I was battling for a starting spot, blew my knee out. So I sat out the whole next year, so you know how that goes. You're
2 years in, you haven't played.
Yeah, so I got 2 years in, and all I'm doing is working out. So now I'm the workout guy. You know how that goes. Come back the next spring, have another surgery. Come back the next fall, play in 3 games, blow my other knee out.
Wow.
So my first 3 years, I live in a weight room. And it was at that point in time that you start building up, hey, man, I don't mind coming.
Right. It's,
you know, like, you know, especially, and I say this, we train more guys that have to work out than want to work out.
Sure.
You know, so, but I wanted to work out. I mean, I love that stuff. I mean, I just love being around it. I mean, when I wasn't working out, I was hanging out in strength coach's office.
Right.
So you start developing this feel for something, and then all of a sudden you realize, wait a second, this dude's getting paid to be a strength coach? Forget that econ major. I'm going to be health and sports science, and I'm going to be a strength coach. So my last 2 years, I actually had success on the football field, which I credit towards my diligence in rehab and working out and trying to be at least one of the strongest, if not the strongest guy on the team. But I would say, you know, that I was a younger guy. So at 19, I knew I was going to be a strength coach. I put all my eggs in one basket. And,
right.
You know, just like, you know, we've all worked for free during my last 2 years of of college. My 2 summers, I worked for minimum wage. Back then was $3.35. I was the summer strength coach with my strength coach, because we all, you know, that back then not everybody stayed during the summer, but I did, because I just didn't want to go home.
Right.
So I worked for him during the week and the weekends, and then I did an internship for him. And then, you know, when I graduated, I knew I wasn't going to the NFL. I was a medical reject. You missed 3 years of playing because of injuries, you probably ain't getting looked at.
The box is checked. You're right.
So that was fine. I mean, I got it, man. I'm a realist. I understand. And plus, you know, I would have liked that opportunity. Like I tell my guys, and I tell guys who don't last a long time. Do you know how many people wish they had a chance to get cut in the NFL?
That's right.
Hell, I wish I did.
That's right.
I mean, hell, I wish I was in training camp and they said, hey, you ain't good enough, got cut. That's better than not going at all.
That's right.
So from that standpoint, it just became it was something that was just crazy. Like, I would have rather lifted weights on a game day than played by the time it was over, man. I got disappointed because back then, you know, in-season training still was – they didn't know how it worked. So you always got into that ebb and flow of, man, you hit that big peak at the summer. Then you really ain't doing much during the season back in those days.
Right.
And then you come back in January and you're like, man, I'm starting over from scratch.
Right.
So I trained hard during the in-season, especially my senior year. I trained 5 days a week because I had a key for the weight room because I worked there.
Yeah.
During the summers, I never gave the key back. And that's when I was like, there's something to this. And that's why I believe that we are, for the most part, we're general physical preparation guys. The specific physical preparation, we do some general specific, but that's handled by the position coaches. I don't like when they step into my world, so I'm not stepping into theirs.
Right.
So I saw that in myself that, hey, I was a pretty good football player that made himself a bigger, faster, stronger, pretty good football player. So I could handle myself against guys who were my skill level because I was better than them from the weight room standpoint.
Right.
You know, so my, you know, your thought process begins, well, what happens if you could get a guy with twice your football ability and at least get him to work halfway hard as you do?
Sure.
And then now those are the freaks.
Now you're on to something.
Yeah, now you got it. So I knew right away, like I said, 19 years old, I was a sophomore in college. I was like, this is it, man. This is too easy. I didn't want to be a football coach because I already knew back then I had some leadership abilities. I mean, a lot of the guys trained with me. The coaches made them train with me and put it on me. If they don't come, that's on you. So I didn't want to be stuck coaching one position knowing 15 guys when I thought my voice was good enough for 115 guys.
Sure.
And to be honest with you, I really didn't want to be on the football field.
Yeah.
Rather be in the weight room. So it was easy choice. You know, so you graduate college and you're like, okay, now what do you want to do? I was getting married. I got fortunate that one of our GAs was a high school head coach at a prep school in Florida, gave me my first opportunity. So I coached some football at the high school level as well as a strength coach. And be honest, this is when it's like there's certain times in your life where, hey, man, it's either put up or shut up. You say you want to coach. All you've talked about is I want to coach. And here comes the very first day of spring ball in Florida, and you're walking out to the field, and you're like, yo, you better hope you can coach because you put all your eggs in this basket. I mean, you know, there's no guarantees you're a good coach.
That's right.
Until you start coaching. And, man, it just clicked, man. I've always had a feeling. I've always had a good feel with players, and it was even at that younger kids the same thing. And even when I was in a private sector with 10-year-old athletes, and then it was on, man. I did 2 years of high school. Tried out for the World League of American Football, flunked a physical. that was good closure. And then went back to Wake, and I started a college career from there. I worked for maybe $1,000 at Wake. Then I got my GA job at Boise State, got my master's there, and then wound up spending nine years at Boise, 2 years at Utah, 7 years at Arizona State, 2 seasons at Louisville, a year in the private sector. And then the true ultimate dream of mine was to be the Carolina Panthers strength coach. And then a lot of people were involved. You can never get somewhere by yourself, especially when you're in the private sector looking outside of the big picture. But at the end of the day, man, when they give you the opportunity and they give you the call, you got to raise up, because this is the big time and they ain't taking charity cases.
That's right.
So it was, and it was. I mean, Dave Caldwell is now the GM for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I remember meeting him for the first time in like 1996 or 7 at Boise State, and he had done a couple of years with the Panthers with Bill Polian when they first started. And we were talking. He goes, "Well, what's your goal?" I said, "I want the Panther job." I mean, it just opened up. I said, "That'd be my ultimate." I mean, my parents retired from New York down there. My wife is from Winston-Salem. I played at Wake.
Right.
Everything that I really needed or knew family-wise, my sister moved down with my parents and her two kids. It was like, that's where I want to be. And I enjoyed North Carolina. And then for it to actually happen,
cool.
It's kind of it's fun. I mean, again, you make a lot of mistakes. I always say you have to make mistakes. Just don't make the same mistake twice, because that's not good business.
Right.
You do bad things over and over, and you choose to make those choices. Well, then those choices become a habit, and once it's habit forming, it's addicted.
Right.
Addictive. So, I like to think that, piss people off along the way. That's part of it too. But at the end of the day, I think I've done more right than wrong, and hopefully, as in anything, now it's about success, and not talking about personal success, team success, because we're all tied in it. It's big, huge business in the NFL level. It's huge, huge business on the college level, man. It's the way it is.
All right.
People got to finally accept that fact, that if you are a strength coach and your number one role is football and the football team don't win, you're getting fired. Just the way it is. So don't even worry about it. It's going to happen.
No, I hear you.
So do your job the best of your ability to hopefully you can help the team win so you don't get fired. And even then, if you don't win enough, they still may fire you like they did to our coaches at Arizona State.
That's right. Well, that's one of those adages that you hear all the time, that you're never really truly a coach until you've been fired,
Well, I've done it now, so I guess I'm truly a coach. But I'll be honest with you. Me and my wife talk about it. Being married, you got to have the right person with you.
There is no doubt.
My wife, we were just talking about it the other day. If my wife wasn't prepared for the profession that we chose, that would have been a hard year.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been a hard year. And the one thing we always talk about is we've proven we can survive. So I really don't worry about it.
Right.
I didn't worry about it before, and I had a good run, man. I got retained 7 times.
Yep.
So I had a hell of a run.
That's pleasant.
That's just the way it is. And I have no, like everybody's, "Oh, you pissed off at the coach that fired you." He don't know me. He was told he could bring in his staff. Well, he doesn't know me. I'm not part of his staff.
Right.
It's like, "Hey, are you pissed off so-and-so got your job?" He didn't hire himself.
Right.
I got to worry about me, man. That's over. I got to worry about team me.
I hear you. Well, that's my point. I wanted to make sure everybody knew that it's not something where you just wake up and all of a sudden you're the head guy at the Carolina Panthers. It's like you said, a lot of people contributed, a lot of mentors, a lot of hard work and grinding and setting goals and taking calculated steps. And those are the things that all contribute to an opportunity like the one you got now. Most people know you, Joe, as the creator of the tier system, and I hesitate even asking you this because I know this could be a 9-hour answer, but the Reader's Digest version, the 1-minute version of I like to talk to originators of a concept. Obviously, you're the originator of the tier system. Obviously, you had many influences with that, but what is the tier system, and more importantly, what I really wanted to get out of this conversation was, what are the common mistakes when you go and you visit? Because I know you're out there nonstop visiting, talking to coaches coming and talk to you. What are the mistakes you see people making when they try to implement the tier system?
Well, in a nutshell, I would say this: the tier system is purely based off of a structure and a rotation of exercise based off priority. That's the simplest way to say it. I have to speak about this Saturday at the NSCA. They've given me 50 minutes. I just keep laughing.
There's no way.
Because both the times I've done this presentation, I did an in-service at Stanford 3 hours straight. I did a run-through of these slides at a hammer strength clinic in Atlanta, hour and 55 minutes. So I talked to my guy at the NSCA, Scott Caulfield, actually yesterday. And what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the slides. And I'm not a slide guy. I hate it. I call it the propaganda. I mean, you got to be able to speak from the heart. And I get some – and the NSCA wants slides, so I give them slides. But what I'm going to have to do is go through and really calculate, okay, where do I want to concentrate my effort and time on which slides?
Sure.
It's going to give those people who come to the – through the presentation, the most bang for their buck. But in the simplest form is that it's an organized, structured rotation of movements or exercises, however you like to call it, based off priority. And when I make sure that the priority, and this is one of the things I'll touch base on Saturday, because in 1997, when I wrote the first article with Rich Gray's prodding, and we submitted it to the NSCA journal, I knew I was going to take a beating because I was doing things that were not protocol.
Right.
You know, back then, before Louis Simmons, and it was Louis who really threw out there to the strength training world rate of force development, dynamic effort method.
Yep.
You know, you had your explosive lifts were your Olympic lifts, and your strength lifts were your power lift, so to speak. And all the lifting protocols, lifting, you do fast before slow. Well, I'm looking at it from the demands of metabolically, energy systems, the things that we're asked to do as strength coaches, because, you know, if we don't do our job, they can't win. Well, I don't think that's true. If you got really good players and you do your job, you're going to win. If you do a good job keeping them healthy, they're going to win. If you really got great players and you're not a really – your strength program isn't very good, you're probably still going to win anyway if you got good coaches. But it helps to have both.
Sure.
But my big thing was always about what I called strength endurance at the time, and now I call it power capacity, is, hey, I know a guy can do something fast when he's fresh. Can he do something fast and explosive when he's under fatigue? Right. And that's when I started looking at it from priority. And then I looked at it from the standpoint of, if I'm going to make the big three, say, back then when we did bench, squat, and hang clean, if those are the priority of what my guys are going to be evaluated, well, I want those first. I don't want them doing, say, and I'm just throwing something out for random, but I don't want their lower body day to look like, okay, we're going to do hang snatch followed by full cleans and then squat, but I'm testing them in a squat.
Right, right.
If that's a priority or a foundation or a core exercise, I want that up front.
Sure.
You know, so that's where I looked at it from a priority based and not a necessarily a speed or movement based as far as fast before slow, because I looked at it like, hey, I test the hang clean, the squat, and the bench. Those are my priority. They're leading off the workouts.
Yep.
I mean, that's just the way I thought. And, you know, then it also came into, again, well, you can't do this and that at the end of a workout. Sure you can. You got to be smart. You got to pick the right movements. I mean, I'm not asking a dude to do a 95%,
right,
you know, clean, classical clean and a jerk. Might be asking them to do, you know, a shrug pull.
Sure.
Or dumbbell snatch or a dumbbell jerk. I just want them to do a total body movement explosively, or now at this point in time, could be a box jump.
Right.
Under some type of fatigue. I want to be able to measure. And that's why I like the jumps, because we max effort those jumps at the end of workouts. You can measure fatigue or you can measure power capacity, but how well they jump compared to their best.
Yep.
And then if a guy is in really good condition, and we've seen this at ASU and Louisville and in the NFL, they can set records because of a lot of the neural factors.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And you're in good shape. And the one thing I've learned at this level is these guys are explosive. That's one thing you really don't have to worry about. Like, I don't do a whole lot of dynamic effort method in my weight programs, except for our hang cleans and our jumps, because we have to.
Right, right.
These dudes are freaky. We get that in our running program, in our med ball program for our big guys, in our single leg jumping program for our skill guys. So we concentrate on a little bit of different goals. So, you know, so the concept is, don't look at what we do. One of the mistakes is don't look at what we do as a sport. You know, lifting for athletes is not a sport. You can't train a sport for a sport. I don't want to hear, well, we do an Olympic-based system.
Right.
Hey, I think there's a lot of great things that Olympic lifting can do for a football player if taught properly and you can invest the time in teaching it. But on the other hand, I don't think you should train your football players like Olympic lifters.
No doubt.
And the same thing for powerlifting. I've trained, not that I'm very good at it, but I did train some Olympic lifters while I was at Boise State when we had a powerlifting team. We had a very good powerlifting team. Those programs were not written like the ones that were written for the athletes.
Right.
And that's the one thing, like I say to people, is you have to remember the protocols that everybody goes, well, that's not lifting protocol. That's not this. That. Those are based off lifting.
Right.
They don't train lifters.
Right.
I train guys who their number one ability is to play professional football. That's their deal.
Yep.
You know, mine is lifting weights.
I always use the example that, you know, if they're great Olympic lifter, or, you know, if we're training with Olympic lifting and they're great Olympic lifters, then they should be great football players and vice versa. If they're great football players, they should be great at that lift. Or if they're great power lifters, they should be bent, you know, and it doesn't always work out. You know, your great football players aren't always great Olympic lifters, and your strongest guy on the team's not always the best football player.
No, you know? But when you get those guys, those are the guys that we coach in the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's like I said. I mean, you look at these guys, and again, and then it's the quality of the lift. I mean, how many times do we hear a guy who can clean 400, but then you watch the guy play and he can't get off the line of scrimmage, and then you see the clean, and it looks nothing like – there's no chance for it to transfer.
Yeah, he's in a limbo or something.
You know, he's got
a
jumping jack catch – power reverse curl. I've had that happen in my gym, and that's when you got to ask yourself, what did we get out of that?
Right.
So those are, you know, that's a big thing. I think the other thing that really surprised me, and that's why when I'm working on this new addition to the tier system books, is how many people have thought that the tier system is based off cycles, like the cycling part of it.
Right.
It's really not. It's totally about the movement rotation. The cycles, I could care less what cycles you use. Like in the book, I put all mine, and the book that I'll write now, the cycles that are in the old one won't even be in it.
Really?
I've kind of redone my I've had very good feedback on my Prilipin charts.
Yep.
And I've done my own density stuff on flat loading, volume accumulation training stuff, and I have this one wave I use for submax effort training for my squat and bench. Those are the only cycles I use now. So there won't even be a lot of set on the other things that I threw in, because like when I, you know, there's just, we don't use it.
Right.
So there's no sense of the Prilipin rules I have now. Nothing's foolproof, but the levels and what I saw at Louisville, the end of my tenure at Arizona State, and even here with my NFL guys, it's, I mean, I've been really, really happy that, hey, I'm on to something with this.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So that's the other thing, is too many people think, oh, it's the cycles. Now, in the traditional model, there was some set standards for how many work sets per tier, and that was done to control overall volume to make it a priority major and minor emphasis.
Yeah. Yeah.
The workout. You know, that's the big thing. And I've seen over the years the exercise choices sometimes don't match where the tier level should be. And that's where I think people have to go back and really do a good job of prioritizing, you know, what is your foundation lifts. And in this day and age, with trying to be a little bit more on the variety side, you may not, your foundation lift may not be year-round clean squat bench.
Right.
Maybe some version of it, but it may not be.
Sure.
And so, you know, then what are your true supplemental lifts? What are your major assistance lifts? Or what I call, a lot of that is like what I call, Dave Tate actually turned the coin for me when we were talking about my system. And again, what we're talking about now of the levels and the layering of the exercises is like your strength mobility stuff, your single leg stuff, your dumbbell upper body stuff, your relative strength stuff. Now it even comes into play with the way we're doing things, your posterior chain, your posterior shoulder, and your neck work. So don't worry about the cycles. I mean, everybody's like, that's the number one thing I tell people when they used to work for me at the college level is the template is the template.
Yeah.
This is how we're going to write a program here. What exercises you choose, that's your creative choice. You may like different now that we had certain rules that I was not, certain exercises were not going to be performed with certain teams. Not because they weren't good, but because the risk reward was too high. And
right.
I'm a big believer in just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Sure.
And a lot of people don't listen about that. I mean, I love every lift. I mean, I'm doing snatches and, you know, trying to do a classical clean and jerk. But at some point in time, you got to look at the other diversity. Again, we're not training lifters.
Right.
I mean, I love when I get these kids from high school when we were in college. They got torn labrums and beat up shoulders because they're doing snatches and jerks, but their coaches never did an overhead press with them to get their shoulders strong.
Yep.
You know, they went right into explosion and acceleration and didn't do anything to get strong. And I'm a big, you know, I'm an old, I believe this, and it's probably a wear you out. People can say what they want, but I just believe everything comes from strength.
Yep.
Want to get faster? Get stronger. You want to get bigger? Get stronger. You don't want to get your guys hurt? Guess what? Get them stronger.
No doubt.
Everything else will fall into place. Everybody's like, what do you do? Man, I got a ninth grader. He's going to start lifting weights. What do I do to get him explosive? Easy. Get him stronger.
That's right.
I saw it live. I mean, I can honestly say that stuff now with the year I spent in the private sector coaching 10-year-olds through seniors in high school. When those dudes got stronger, we weren't even trying to get them fast.
That's right.
I did more reverse walking lunges with those guys probably than they ever knew existed. But when we started running, them dudes were bringing it.
Right.
So I think, in a nutshell, it's the biggest thing I'll say about systems are this, and this is my big thing now. We've done and a lot of people have influenced it, but the number one thing, and when I did an Elite Fitness interview with Jim Wendler, he had asked me the same thing. The biggest thing that I really kind of are proud of for myself is we've not broken the integrity of the template.
Yeah.
We've made some very unique changes that I think were for the best, and a lot of it comes from the way I train. I mean, I train the system.
Yeah.
I'm doing some Olympic days now because, again, I'm training for a sport with that. I use my tier system days as my athletic days for because I'm doing Highland Games too.
Gotcha.
So a lot of these changes came through my training, and I saw the benefits. I started working this stuff into the athlete's training, and then it really takes off, and then you're like, oh, okay, wait a second here. And then it's what can you develop and put into the system without changing? Like, you know, we've talked, I'm a three-day-a-week lift guy. Now, we do blitz days and all that.
Yep.
We have three main sessions a week that we train, and everybody was like, well, you know, in the NFL they do a 4-day work week.
Right.
So I know. Well, what are you gonna do about your lifting? We're gonna work out 3 days.
Yeah. That was my,
one day is gonna be a blitz day. I mean, how do I, you know, here, like you said, I mean, I'm fortunate. I created a system for my athletes, and because of people that worked with me believing in it, saying, hey, you gotta put this out there. The masses need to see this.
Right.
System is different. This system is going to spark interest. How can I go and say, okay, well, I believe in the tier system, except now that I'm an NFL coach, I'm going to train upper lower body split, which I don't believe.
Right.
I'm not saying it's wrong. A lot of great strength coaches kill it. A lot of guys have won more games doing that than I've won doing it with my system.
Sure.
But I believe in what I do, and I've seen it from the things that I control, the reliability and the resiliency of the program is proven.
Yeah.
I've proven it in five different stops, and as you know, I mean, I can rattle off lists of schools that are using some type of version or have taken it and
yep.
make their own, but you know, and I know enough people that, hey, man, I was at so-and-so, your book's on their desk. I've been over there, your book's on their desk. So it's out there. And,
wow.
it's, you know, and I'm not, again, I'm not telling, I never wanted to tell anybody you should do it my way, because being a sport strength coach, not a lifting coach, and studying as many programs as I've studied, there is no wrong way to do it, because every team, you can look at guys who have been at programs, and some of them more than others, but you can look at guys who have been at programs for 10 or 12 years and look at their records. Some of them wave with the recruiting cycles. Now, some don't, because they hit every year. I mean, there's five or six schools that a bad year for them is 8 wins.
That's right.
But, I mean, I've seen teams that, you know, they run the wave, they play in a couple of BCS games, then all of a sudden they're in its second tier, then they're not in a game.
Right.
And they build themselves back up by developing their players, get up a good wave. And when you look at it, if anything, the strength coach believes he's made his program better the longer he stayed. So, again, it comes down to, you know, was there a transition in the coaching staff?
Right.
You know, did the assistants change? Because when you're winning, good coaches leave.
That's right.
Your ultimate goal is to replace them with a better coach. Guess what? Sometimes that doesn't happen.
That's right.
Happen. Or, you know, did the success of your teams, now your guys aren't working hard enough in recruiting.
Right.
So now, did you bring good enough players? You know, so those are the things that I laugh at. It's just like, you know, you look at other people, oh, well, for 5 years, this guy's strength program won 50 games, and then him and his coach take another job, and they get fired 3 years later.
Yeah.
Well, guess what, man? It's different.
That's right.
Different conference, different players, different recruiting. So at the end, I mean, we're in a very unique deal when we're evaluating. And I'm 100% for it, because let me just tell you, I used to laugh back in, you know, the late 90s when everybody's like, do you want to be a football guy or do you want to be tied with administration? And I always said I wanted to be tied with a football guy because I'm going to make more money.
Yep, I agree.
So I'm going to do this, and you're going to get fired anyway.
I agree.
I saw it with some of the best strength coaches in the late 90s and early 2000s. You hear the story. Oh, yeah, the AD said, I'm hired by administration. I'm okay. They hired the football coach.
New coach.
And within a month, it's like, hey, you need to go find out how you're getting paid out. My guy's going to be here at the end of the month.
And you're that's right.
So at the end of the day, hey, I want to be locked in with the football coach because at least I know where I stand.
I agree with you
100%. If I win, he's going to help me get more money. If we lose, I know I'm going to be gone unless someone tells me different. But I'll take it like I'm gone, and I'd rather be that way than, well, administration says I'm good. Hey, they're breaking these college football coaches off.
No,
if that dude says, if you're going to pay him $5 million,
yeah,
and that guy says, I need my guy, that guy's coming.
He's getting his guy.
And it means has nothing to do with you. It's just like, as I've learned, as you get older, I would like to think you get smarter, wiser, but it's, and I try to tell this to younger coaches, you know, you interview, you know, oh, well, they're bringing in three guys to interview. And you don't, you know, you're like, I'm beating these guys, you know, remember, right. You're like, three guys? Oh, I'm beating those dudes.
Yeah.
But then what you find out is
somebody knows somebody.
Or you did a great job, but you just didn't fit.
Right. I got a good point.
It just doesn't work. Sometimes it's just the way it is. Hey, good guy, extremely smart. This guy had this going for him. It's one of those things that, and a lot of it, like it is, you know, is depending on who the lead guy is in the search process, might be the guy that you're working for if you're going for a head job. And that guy could be like, okay, I'm going to bring in these three guys. C might be the smartest of them all.
Right.
A is the guy that meshes. He's not far off, but me and him mesh real good.
Yeah.
Our relationship's going to be really, really good.
And the other thing, I've said that on this show as well, is, you know, being tied to the football coach, I agree with you 100%. You know, but then on top of that, now show me another person on staff, on that football staff. If you're the 10th football coach, show me another guy that's dealing with 120 guys. You know, be paid like a coordinator, you know.
And I believe that. And I think it's finally, I give kudos to some of these coaches at the schools that are able to do it.
Right.
And that also have built a relationship with their strength coach to get it done. Because now we're seeing that.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And again, the NFL coach, strength coach, yeah, we still deal with everybody. And I've seen it a little bit different. But the college strength coach, just from the administration of the football program, deserves to be paid on the coordinator level.
I agree.
Because, again, we talk about it now with the unique rules and regulations of an NFL offseason and vacation periods. Name me one football coach in Division I-A who doesn't get most of the month of July off.
Right.
But where's that strength coach? Maybe getting a three-day-a-week 4th of July weekend off?
Yep.
I mean, seriously. Yep. I know when I worked college, I took the 4th of July weekend off because that was our discretionary week in the summer.
Yep.
And before that, there was a discretionary week. Sometimes I didn't get the full week off. So, you got to be rewarded for that.
Oh, shoot. I didn't take a single I didn't take a single vacation day the first 5 years in South Florida. Tennessee was the first place that I'd ever gotten 7 straight days off, you know.
And again, people don't look, again, football coaches, they do a lot of good things. I'm not here to football. But it's just like you're in college. You're in the middle of your winter program. The coaches have been on the road recruiting. I get that. But they get a week off after the signing date, and
you're still
guess who's still out working?
That's right. And handling the whole deal. No, I'm with you. You know, the you kind of answered two of the questions I had in there. You know, one being, you know, that when you got to the NFL, what the changes that, you know, that you made to your system, which probably wasn't a whole lot, but, you know, you touched on the foundations, you know, your three – you know, core list, for lack of a better word, is that maintained bench squat clean, or is that clean become something else?
No, we clean variations of cleans.
I mean, we
could have it on clean day. We could be doing power pulls, deadlifts, block cleans, block pulls.
Right.
You know, the one thing with the NFL guy is, hey man, I don't even hesitate, coach. I don't clean. Okay, what do? I like dumbbell cleans. Fine.
We're
doing a clean. Just like squats. I got, you know, single leg squat, pistol squat, barbell squat, machine squat. I don't care as long as we're doing some type of squat.
Right.
So we still have some foundation principles, but the uniqueness of one or two guys may not.
Sure.
Like on our squat day, only two guys on our team didn't do a bilateral squat.
I got you.
One guy did a pistol squat. He was an 11-year vet. And one guy did a barbell split squat. So, you know, that's the way it is. In college, you might be like, yo, brother, you're getting under a bar.
Yeah, that's right.
In the NFL, it's, you know, hey, man, we just need you to squat. So
yeah.
What kind of squats do you like to do?
Yeah, we got
to
get a squat. We got to get a hinge in there.
Yeah, so it's you know, like we are very more, you know, it's easy, it's adaptable. And when you're, and that's one of the things I would tell young strength coaches, believe in what you believe in, but you got to know every system.
I do. I agree.
You got to know everything. I mean, you got to know HIT. You got to know, and I mean the old school HIT to the hybrid HIT.
Yep.
You got to know Olympic lifts. You got to know power lifts. You got to, at this day and age, you got to know a little bit of West Side.
Yep.
You got, you know, whatever you, whatever systems are out there, because there's a lot to draw from, and you're never going to know when you're going to be in a situation that you're going to have to draw from that.
Right.
Like everybody's, when I first did the tier system, and when I spoke in Atlanta, Ben Pollard was there. Ben knew me from Boise State. You know, back in the 90s, if you lifted 3 days a week, you did machines.
That's right.
And if you lifted 4 days a week, you were free weight. Well, here I was doing, because at that time it had gone that way. Now I think it's coming back full circle. I hear a lot more teams are doing 3 day a week lifting. And my rationale, another one of my rationale for that was, is because the running volumes were too crazy.
That's right.
I mean, my conditioning volume in college were ridiculous. I didn't want them guys lifting weights.
Right.
You know, so, but, and that leads into what you asked me. So what my typical college week would have been this. Monday would have been, in the perfect world, before player run practices.
Right.
Which I'm not a fan of. But Monday would have been a linear speed day and a session T. So our priority would have been some type of clean.
Yep.
Tuesday would have been a conditioning day and blitzes. So all of our individual needs day.
Yep.
Wednesday in my college day was no run, big squat Wednesday. I didn't, at that point in time, I did not want them to do any type of running on squat day.
Sure.
And that was going to be the big deal. Thursday was another conditioning day. Friday was lateral speed and session U, so your press day.
Yep.
What we do now, what I've learned now in the NFL is, again, I'm dealing with high-level guys. Guys who genetically
can adapt
quick. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, it really is. I told Mike Robertson, NFL guys are the best guys to coach and they're the easiest guys to coach as far as teaching.
Yep.
Dudes can pick it up.
You show them, they get it.
It's a joke. I call it the three-set rule. It took 3 years in college. It takes three sets in the NFL. And so what we did is, again, I wanted to stay with my three-day-a-week work and I wanted to stay with my blitz work. So we're a Monday through Thursday program in the NFL, which I prefer. I know, you know, from a recovery standpoint, maybe it's a little tough during the week, but you're getting 3 days a week off on the back end. Plus, as you know, a lot of dudes bounce.
Yep.
Thursdays, they're out.
Yep.
So I didn't want to get into, and I was fortunate enough that I work with a great coach, our athletic trainer and our general manager, who are all involved in the process. They believed in that too, because I didn't want it to be, one, I didn't want it to be Monday through Friday, pick what 4 days you come in.
Right.
That helps no organization.
I agree.
I didn't want it to be Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, because I didn't want guys lifting on Wednesdays to get out of here on Thursday and then screwing up the rest of the week for me.
Yep.
So what my proposal was when I got interviewed, and what we do is, because, again, because of adaptability and because of how fast these guys can just develop, they can respond so much faster. I said, okay, I really don't need two major conditioning days. So I pulled out the Thursday conditioning and moved session U to Thursday.
Okay.
So our work week now is Monday is session, depends now, because when we go to OTAs or mini camp, I may switch to sessions.
Yep.
But a typical four-day week would be
the first 5 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, linear speed, session T, conditioning, blitzes, and I call it player choice. That's almost a PRP day in the weight room.
Okay.
Because I've got some high-level vets that are really good in the weight room that
yeah.
They'll talk to me, and I'll let them know what we're doing the next day, and they'll run their own blitzes.
Yeah.
Like, we've got blitz cards and pods around the weight room like we did in college. A lot of guys follow that. But I've also got a bunch of dudes who, I got three or four guys that they take 5, 6, 7, 10 guys, and they'll go do their little blitz program on Tuesday. So
that's good.
And again, I know who I can entrust that into.
Right.
And they know training. Sure. I know where they train when they're not with me.
they train with good people, I have no problem with that because I'm going to get what I want on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Right.
On Wednesday, what we do now is I created and developed in a template for the field. That's kind of our explosive development on the field. That's where we'll do a lot of hurdle work for mobility. Well, our big guys will throw med balls, and our skill guys will do their single leg jump progressions.
Okay.
So that, and then we go in and squat. So big squat Wednesday is alive and well for us in college. And then on Thursdays we go out and we do like a lateral speed day, and then come in, and then that's our big press day. By putting together Wednesday and Thursday lift back to back, we've made some slight adjustments in the tiers. Okay. As far as like the easiest one to give you a great example is, because tier two on Wednesday is an upper body, and tier one on Thursday is an upper body, and right. It's your big one. So on tier two on Wednesday, that's when we do our vertical pull and vertical press.
Okay.
Because on Thursday, we're going to do our horizontal pull and horizontal press.
Makes sense.
And that's how we look at. Same thing with our lower body. We know we're squatting on Wednesday, so our tier three is, well, even now, it's going to be some type of single leg work, and sometimes it's a body weight single leg work, just like a body weight pistol.
Right.
Body weight pistol progressions. And then there are sometimes, depending on how much work we might have done during phase two, where I might even make it just a band work for our outside the box guys, especially our wideouts if they ran too much.
Sure.
Because if we the way we do our schedule, a big block of our guys may come in and lift after field work during phase two.
Yep.
So it works out well for that. We do, and again, most of those guys jump. They might do one, like, Olympic lift variation a week, and the other ones are jumps. Most of the times we'll do two. When we get into season, most of our stuff's are jumps.
Yeah, no doubt.
We do, especially with our outside-the-box guys. I do a lot of landmine stuff for total body work during the season with my bigs. But, again, it all, you know, so... And again, and I just know, man, I just seen it now. And that's why I'm excited about what I've been able to see from a professional standpoint in the NFL is, again, the reliability and the resiliency of this program at any level with any guys, and the uniqueness of the short window that we have, and how well these guys could still develop what we accomplish in 8 weeks, which, you know, is really five, but really it's two.
Yeah,
it's
a 5-week off season and a 4-week spring ball.
You know, like my guys, some of the guys that I've developed, you know, you develop different relationships with different guys.
Right.
But some of my like guys, the guys who train and they love training and they really do enjoy being in the weight room.
Yep.
They're like, man, I wish you would have it in the old time when you had five more weeks with you.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm like, you? What do you think when I see what you guys have accomplished? So it's a credit to them, but it's also a credit to my staff and our training staff, because we all work together, that our guys want to be around.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, that we have great attendance. Our guys give good effort. They understand our belief in the density and power capacity. I mean, our guys get a lot of work done. I mean, they'll get 60 to 67. I think the most we've ever had is like 68 sets in a workout. I got guys can get that done in under an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just ripping through stuff.
So efficient.
Then you look at their numbers, and it ain't like they're donking around. I mean, these guys, they're moving some pretty nice numbers.
Yeah, they're unbelievable.
Pretty excited about what they can do. So it's not like they're ripping through 67 sets and when it's time to squat, they only got 135 on the bar.
Right, right.
So it's been a good deal. And like I said, I think when you've developed a plan, I don't care what your plan is, and this may be one of your questions about younger strength coaches, what you really have to do, and what I've really, really try to do when I'm listening to other coaches that have worked for me or read an article that kind of sparked my interest and how I could, one of the sayings I like to say is absorb, modify, and apply it to the template is, I think as a young coach, you're so infatuated in reading your material that you're not developing your philosophies. And, you know, I've seen it, and I've seen it live, and I've heard the horror stories. My guys aren't getting better. My athletes don't get better. Okay, what do you do? Well, I tried so-and-so's program for 6 weeks, and then I did this guy's program for 6 weeks. And I said, well, there it is. I mean, you can't go from med balls to chains and bands to stability ball work to calisthenics and think you're going to get any. Pick one and run with it and see what happens. You know, that's what I like about what we're doing, because there is a lot of ability to fit a lot of stuff in.
I agree.
You know, the thing, you know, I'm not a big screening guy. I think there's some merit in it. I believe if you find a good program, you're screening every day, but there's some merit into it.
And you're adding correctives every day if you're writing a good program.
Yeah, I mean, so, but, and that's what, and so for me, we used to screen at Louisville was our best job, because I thought Brian Dermody was the best strength coach in the country, and I still think he's the best strength coach in the country, even though he's out of coaching right now, his choice. In functional movement screen, like looking at it and just ripping it apart.
And getting it.
And developing his own screening plan, his own way of, I mean, his charts that he gave us on corrective, if you had an issue or coming off of rehab protocols, were ridiculous.
Wow.
There's not a strength coach that's ever done anything like that. And one of the things that we were working on towards the end of our tenure at Louisville at year two was, how do we fit in the individual correctives based off of what he did with the screens into the tier stuff so that we don't have to invest more time in it?
Right.
And that's when we started looking at, like, okay, well, on total body day, we'll look at these if, you know, on up. And then when I read an article by Mike Robertson, he called it the 7 R's of training.
Yeah, I saw him present on that. It's good.
We use all that. I do 8 R's because we use root. He didn't do anything for core, so I called him out on that. So we call core root now.
Right.
I looked that up in the thesaurus. You can check it out. It works. So we use his term reset, or his activation term, and we put that into all the tiers.
That's good.
So they're always, well, not every set is not, they don't reset every set, but in their preparation progressions,
right,
we build in the root and reset stuff into the workout to help the density and to kind of take away from the number of blocks that you would have in a long-term process, because at the end of the day, I want my guys out of there as fast as I can.
Which is also great, because if you want an active room, you got guys doing stuff in between sets.
Our guys, and that's the one thing.
You know,
it doesn't matter what age. A dude's got time to talk.
Idle hands.
I mean, it's our guy. Yeah, our guys are moving. And you know what? I think they enjoy it once they get it, because it's like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I tell my guys, hey, that gives you guys more time to do some of the stuff you like to do on the back end.
Right.
And again, when you're dealing with the guys we deal with, remember, they've all trained at different colleges. They've all had different combine prep guys.
Seen success.
Yeah. They've all had guys that they go back and train when they're not on site, or what I still call campus.
Right.
And you can't write everybody's favorite lifts into the structured program as much as you listen.
Right.
You try to get as much as you can in. So at the end of the day, if a guy can invest 15 minutes of time on the things that he likes or things that he wants to get done, most of the time those guys do their own corrective.
Yeah, they're not scared of work. You just got to keep – but if you, but
well,
you
it's
keep
just like anything else. You know, you heard the stereotypes, NFL guys, this. Hey, it's expectations.
That's right.
It's just like anywhere else. These guys are not, they're 24, 25, 26 years old. They're big kids.
That's right.
I mean, I hate to say it that way. I don't mean
it's
it.
It's not negative either.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not being disrespectful. They're big kids that play a game.
That's right.
And it's just like anything else. They want to be coached because this is their job too. Now they like their job,
right? Oh yeah,
and they understand it's a real good job.
I should keep this.
Yeah, so they're good. They're not, but it's like anything else. If your expectations are low, they're going to confine to the expectations. My expectations for our guys are: I want to be an extremely up tempo. Room in our workouts are going to be up tempo, density based. If we can bang out 69 sets of work in less than an hour for 500 reps, then I want to bang out 69 sets of work with 530 reps in less than an hour.
Sure.
And those guys, they can do it.
No doubt.
Because they are not. The other thing too is now don't challenge them.
Oh yeah.
Because they ain't afraid of a challenge either. No. Now they want to show their athleticism at any chance they can get.
Well, that's what makes them great. All right, guys. As you can see, Joe's a beast, and you know he can go on and on about any subject. And with the restrictions of YouTube and all that, and your time, I want to make sure that we go ahead and we split this up into two segments. So make sure you check back next week and see part two of Iron Game Chalk Talk with Joe Ken. And we'll talk a little bit more about his tier system and things along those lines. Before I let you go, click below to any of the links that we mentioned in the episode thus far and in the future for Joe, as well as make sure you go and check out Strength On Demand, strength-ondemand.com, and check that out as well. So we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot.